This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Every 2 years, Transparency International releases a Corruption Perception Index, which measures the perceived levels of public sector corruption in 168 countries. In the latest index, Malaysia ranked number 54 on the list with a score of 50%, whereas countries like Denmark and New Zealand have consistently ranked within the top 5 for many years. Are there best practices in information systems and financial management in these countries that we can learn from? Now, before we compare practices in other countries, we must first understand the underlying differences between them. Knut Gottfredsen, chair of Transparency International Denmark, explains some political differences between Malaysia and Denmark.
In Denmark, we have a multi-party parliamentary system. Currently, we have 9 parties in parliament, and no single party has a majority. So that means that whoever wants to govern the country, they need to put together a coalition of parties to achieve a majority. Because the majority is always quite small. If there's a dissatisfaction in the population, they will change the votes, which means that a new coalition will have the opportunity to govern. I think it's important when you compare two countries that you have a good understanding of the underlying differences so that you can better appreciate. For instance, as I understand it, you have some big ethnic groups, and in Denmark, we are much more homogeneous ethnically. So that means that there are some things that will be easier for us because we don't have ethnical conflicts underlying in society.
Bearing these differences in mind, 30% of Danish people surveyed in the last global corruption barometer conducted by Transparency International felt that political parties were very corrupt. However, there was high public confidence in the judiciary, parliament, police, and other public institutions. How do we know whether these perceptions of transparency are an accurate representation of the real situation?
Well, first of all, we have the changing political landscape. Let's say that you have a coalition that wants to perform corrupt acts and cover them up. Then a few years later, you will have a new coalition. And of course, they will look in all the drawers. They will say, well, look, the previous government was very corrupt and they stole with arms and legs. So that's certainly one deterrent. But I think also we have, and that's important to understand, we have a very efficient and powerful government audit office. Of course, they cannot look at all the money every year, but they make various audits and their reports are publicly available. Also, we have a very free press. You don't need a license to make a newspaper. The press has protection of their sources. If I'm a journalist and you're a public official and you tell me that you know that this minister has been doing something improper and I write an article about it, then I can protect you as a source. It will be difficult to cover up things.
On a more personal level, how do we discourage public officials from engaging in corruption? Knut believes it is important to make the risk not worth taking, and this can be done by paying civil servants a good salary while instituting a strong government audit.
We had a big administrative change that started in 1660 and went on for the next 200 years. First of all, public officials were given a good salary. They had job security and they received a nice pension. On the other hand, we instituted an effective government audit, which meant that there was a high probability that if you cheated, you would be caught. If you were caught taking public funds, you would lose your job, you would lose your pension. So although there was opportunity, the consequences of corruption would be very severe. But I think the main issue was that public officials were given a salary that they could actually live and support a family with. If you think about it, it's unreasonable to require a public official which has a very low salary, which is impossible actually to live on, not to engage in corrupt activities.
Besides Denmark, New Zealand is another country with a powerful audits office. Lynn Provost, Auditor General of New Zealand, explains the nation's audit practices.
My area is the public sector audit, so my answer is within the concept of the public sector. I am the auditor of all public entities in New Zealand, and we have approximately 3,800 public entities. Each year, we carry out a financial audit on those 3,800 entities. In addition to doing the annual financial audit, we also have the ability to do performance audit and inquiry, and we report to Parliament approximately 20 to 30 reports a year on the inquiries, the performance audits and the financial audit. The financial audits and the performance audits are carried out on a regular basis, whereas the inquiries are usually at the request of either a politician or a member of the public.
And the availability of a follow-up procedure is just as important, if not more important, than the transparency in audit practices. In New Zealand, there is a two-pronged approach behind formal follow-up procedures.
We look at the end of them once we've gathered our evidence and formed our judgments at whether we should make any recommendations. Generally, people take those seriously, and either 18 months or 2 years later, we go back and see what they've done, and we would expect action on those recommendations. For the reports that are tabled in Parliament, they are referred to one of the Parliamentary Select Committees, and the Select Committee also asks us to brief them on their report, and then generally they examine the particular public entity on the finding and ask them what they're going to do. So while I follow up, so does Parliament, which I think is an important element of our system.
So if a public official has been found to misuse public funds, what is the follow-up procedure to ensure accountability?
It depends to what extent that they have misused those funds. If it is fraudulent, it would be referred to an appropriate investigation agency, and in our country that is police or the Serious Fraud Office. That is not common in our system. We are in the fortunate position of having a highly transparent and clean public sector, but that's not to say we're perfect. I'm also the controller, which means that if people have spent money on an activity that is not within their appropriation, is illegal, or is above their appropriation, I will then point that out, and there will be a process to provide the appropriate authority for that money to be spent or for the expenditure not to be made any further.
Finally, Lynn believes that equal access to information is crucial in fostering a culture of accountability.
An important part is that our government has to produce a full set of accrual financial statements every year. And that means that every bit of money that they receive and everything that they spend, everything they own and everything they owe has to be brought together and put into public arena after I've audited it. I think that is an absolutely critical part of our system. You can't hide money, you can't pretend that you don't owe money, and everybody has the same information.
Now, on the other hand, Chair of Transparency International Denmark, Knut, believes that establishing a system based on trust is key.
I think that one of the key factors, and that's something that's very difficult to build, is that our society is built on a large component of trust. Our immediate reaction is to trust people, not to distrust them. For instance, in our society, we don't have as many controls because we expect people to do the right thing. I don't know if you're familiar with Lenin, who said that trust is good, but control is better. In Denmark, we say that control is good, but trust is cheaper. So basically, if you can run a society with a large component of trust, you have a much higher satisfaction from the citizens. You will have a lower level of corruption. But it's something which is difficult to build. And once you have achieved a high level of trust, it's actually possible to lose that or reduce that trust very quickly if you find out that you cannot trust those that you trusted originally.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.